Sports Ethos New York Knicks podcast right at the deadline. We got to drop this. I tried to line some guests up. I screwed up one. My fault, brother. I'm not going to ruin the surprise and tell you who it was. But I definitely dropped the ball on that one. But hopefully next week, we have some guests lined up. But let's get right to it. It's game one. Get focused out here. I think I see people getting focused now. There's a little bit last week, you guys lost focus. And I can be accused of it as well. But there's a lot of fighting back and forth from folks trying to get that last word in on the potential matchup of playing the Sixers versus the Heat. Now we know it's the Sixers and whether or not the Knicks were in trouble in that first round matchup in short. All I wanted. And I'll say it over and over this episode, and it'll be the last time I say anything about it. All I wanted was people to acknowledge, because 2 weeks ago, this wasn't the case, acknowledge that the Heat 76er potential first round matchup was not going to be fun. And then if the Knicks were the 2 seed, they were not going to be playing, well, asterisk on the Miami, because they're a legitimate playing team. But the Sixers were not. Asterisk on Miami, because we all know how Miami rocks come playoff time. We broke it down. And you saw Jimmy Butler say this. You saw J.J. Redick say it. I think it was J.J. Redick say it. It's absolutely the truth that nobody wants to play the Heat in the first round. And the reason is, and Jimmy Butler said it, nobody wants to see the Heat in the 7-game series. And the reason is, to me, is that when you give Spoelstra that much time to prepare for you, things get a little sticky for teams. That's one of the best coaches to ever do it. And he has the personnel to execute his game plan. So you saw it. You almost saw it in the Sixer playing game where they pulled that zone out and stifled the Sixers for an entire quarter. And the Sixers came out and they were able to make some changes, make some adjustments, but it still came down to them having the best player on the floor in Embiid in that fourth quarter. And they pulled it out. But, you know, who would have thunk it? If it wasn't the Heat and somebody said, oh, this team pulled out a zone to win a playing game, most people would be like, oh, that's not going to work. But it worked. And if you watch the zone, that zone was a tricky little zone. And it was because of the personnel and it was because of the discipline of the players. So, yeah, no, nobody really wants to play in the Miami Heat in the first round. And I just wanted that acknowledged. That was all. You can be a fan. Listen. I'm not afraid to say I'm a Knicks fan. You can be a fan of the team and you can be confident as a fan, absolutely. But you have to delineate between you being a fan and you being an analyst. You know, you want to be taken seriously for your analysis, but then you do some fan talk stuff and dismiss objective analysis. The Celtics don't want to play the Heat. Does that mean that they're afraid of them? Does that mean that they would try to avoid them? No, that means that they don't want to play them. But now that they're playing them, let's go. And I don't think anybody in that locker room is afraid of the matchup. But if you gave them a choice, they're going to say they'd rather play someone else. They'd rather play the Bulls because the Heat are a tougher team. And to admit that as a Knicks fan was not crazy. It doesn't make you a fake fan. It doesn't make you a fraud. You're being objective. The 76ers are not a 2 seed. A 7 seed. They were playing at a 3-seed pace. That's all. Just acknowledge it. Now that it's been acknowledged, here we are now. And you're seeing now, a lot of this is Knicks for click stuff. We know that. You engage the Knicks in negative conversation or engage Knicks fans in negative conversation, negative analysis of the team. You're going to go viral. They know that. They do it for engagement. And you guys play into it every single time. But I'm not going to beat that dead horse. The fact of the matter is that you don't want the Knicks to go into this series as prohibitive favorites to beat the Sixers. You don't want to create that level of false expectation for the team. Like Durant said, and I've been critical of Durant in 1,000 different ways. That doesn't mean he's not a great player, by the way. But one thing he did say that was insightful about the Knicks was that the Knicks situation in general, the vibe is better without expectations. And I will go to my grave with that. Because there's no question or doubt that when you create a high level expectation for the Knicks, the pressure is palpable. And not every player, I'm not talking about on this particular team, But in general, in the NBA, not every player can play up to it. Some players falter. A lot of them falter. I'm not saying these guys are those types of players. I don't think that they are. But that pressure is too much for a lot of players. And you hear players talk about it all the time. You just heard Josh Hart talk about it on the Roommates podcast. They're playing in LA, playing in New York. It's a very different thing than playing in other places. And then guys come to New York and they want to be the hero in New York playing against New York. But they're afraid to be the hero in New York. They're afraid to fail because they get torn apart. And these guys spend too much time on social media. You saw Jalen Brunson talk about how he had a hard time getting over his mistake in game six, turnover in game six. And he didn't focus on this, but he happened to mention, he's like, you would see it on social media all the time. Like, he couldn't escape it. He couldn't get it out of his mind. That eats some guys up, and you don't know how it's going to affect guys. The Knicks are trending almost every time they play in sports. If you check on Twitter, if you look under the sports tab, they're trending almost every time they play. That pressure is palpable. You don't want the Knicks to play with a high level of expectation against a team that they should not have a high level of expectation against. And I just needed that acknowledged. But now that you're here and you're seeing guys like Draymond Green saying you don't have a chance, and Barkley and Shaq and all of these guys saying Knicks don't have a chance, they're doing it for engagement, but that's what you want. You want people to say that this team is the underdog because it creates a different vibe for the team. And that's the vibe that you want as a fan. You want that team to go out there like the world is against them, like their back is against the wall. That's what you want. You don't want to go out there with some of the cocky talk that some of you guys are on, where you're sticking your chest out, you're telling them you're going to beat everybody. I don't care if we play Boston in the first round. You don't want that nonsense because that's harder for the team to deal with, right? And you might say, hey, these are pros and, you know, they don't worry about stuff like that. If there's one good thing that's come out of all of these podcasts from these players and ex-players, is you're starting to get a window into the mindset of a player. And that is complete and utter nonsense if you think the players are not thinking like that. They are 100% thinking like that because they spend too much time on social media, which is something I mentioned months and months ago, or how I wish that they didn't in terms of the Knicks players. I wish that they didn't because it's a toxic place. And it can seep into your head. And some players are not built to play through it. And I think the Knicks have been burdened for years, even before social media, burdened for years with players that spend too much time on the opinions of the media and the fans and weren't able to rise above it. And I think this team is able to rise above it. But the first, to me, the easiest way to do that is to have everybody think that you're trash. Everybody thinks that you're going to get beat. Back against the wall. And now you can band together and you can play up. I shouldn't say play uphill. That's the wrong term. You know, I'm going to bring that up in a minute. But you can play, you can fight and scrap and claw for everything that you get instead of thinking you've been handed credit, handed victories, handed series wins, and then get smacked in the face by the team that might be better than you. Now, do I think the Sixers are better than the Knicks? I think the Sixers, I'm going to turn back the clock. Because if you've been listening to this show, you know that it was right around Christmas time that I told you I thought the Knicks can overtake the Sixers in the standings and the Sixers were not a legitimate top four team. I said this on this show because the Sixers had an easier record in the first half of the season than the Knicks did. And the Knicks were only a couple games, but I thought the Knicks would overtake them in the standings. I said that on this show. I said I thought the Sixers were a little fraudulent as a top four team. That said, the Sixers are a little bit different now than they were back then. How are they different? Batum, Lowry. And you might say, who cares? Why are you sweating Batum and Lowry? That's how I know you're not really thinking about it from a basketball standpoint. You think about it from a fan standpoint. Guys like that, they make big, they're like Josh Hart type players. They make big plays outside of scoring. Even though you saw a big scoring game from Batum against the Heat. Those are the type of things that those guys do. They know what the team needs, and they give you what the team needs to the best of their ability. And because their skills are eroding, the best of their ability comes and goes. And you see that with Lowry. What you saw in the series last year, Lowry made every big play against the Knicks. And that's how I knew Miami was going to be weaker this year come playoff time. But we're going to see in a minute because they've replaced Lowry with guys like Hawkes and Jovic and, you know, guy Rozier. You know, so who knows what we're going to see with the Heat. But coming into the season, that's why I thought the Heat weren't going to be as good and weren't going to be as strong come playoff time, because guys like Lowry and Gabe Vincent and Strus, they made big, intangible plays on both ends of the floor for the team. And you saw Josh Hart talk about Lowry stealing the ball from Mitchell Robinson on a rebound, changing game one against the Heat last year. And Miami ended up winning that game. The Knicks never recovered from that play in that game. He ended up winning that game. And he said that it felt like they were fighting an uphill battle for the rest of the series. And he told you so much in that little statement. Not only was he giving you a window into some of the things that Kyle Lowry can do to your team, some of the intangibles. Not only was he giving you a glimpse into that, but he was telling you the mindset of even a mentally strong team. And the Knicks are objectively a mentally strong team. They've shown that all year long. Hart, especially, a mentally strong player. You know, his confidence can be wavered on that jump shot, sure. Outside of that, he's a mentally strong player. There's a mentality there that they gave you a clue about. You lose game one at home against a team that you know, can be tricky to beat. It F's with your psyche. That's why game one is so huge. It's always huge, I think, for the home team. But I think that's important for a team that you think has the ability to beat you. It's to see them make intangible plays that you typically make to beat you in a game that you felt like you were very prepared for at home. It can change the series. And it literally changed the series for the Knicks, because the Knicks never really fully recovered. Although they were one or two possessions away from game seven, bringing it to game seven, they had to fight uphill all the time. And it was like this mentality of poverty, where you feel like you don't have it. Like, so you're not thinking like, hey, from a place of confidence and power. You're always thinking, we're not good enough, blah, blah, blah. That's different from what I think they're going into this series with, where they're like trying to prove something. That's different than I got to prove it to myself. It's different than I got to prove it to you. And in that Heat series, it felt like after they lost game one, they had to prove it to themselves that they were good enough to do it. And then they were burdened with poor play from Randle, you know, up and down play from Quickly, and then Quickly got hurt. Like, there were so many things that happened in the series. And they had holes in the lineup, Mitchell Robinson being one of them, and we'll come to that in a minute. You know, but the psyche of these players is a little bit weaker sometimes than the psyche of the fans, who, because you're not on the court, you could talk tough and act like, you know, we're going to sweep everybody and nobody can beat this team, blah, blah, blah. But the guys on the court, they got to play and they got to deal with the psychology of the game. The psychology of the game is more important than you guys give it credit for. And I think coming into this Sixer game, the psychology for the Knicks is in the perfect place. The psychology of, I don't care who we play from the fans, is not the same as, I don't care who we play from the players. But, hey, everybody thinks you're going to sweep the Sixers. Everybody thinks you're going to wipe the floor with the Sixers. And the Sixers win a game, then all of a sudden you got self-doubt. When everybody's telling you that the Sixers are going to beat you and they're better, even if they win a game, the Knicks are still going to be going to play with confidence, at least for the next one. Because they're trying to prove something to you, right? They're not afraid of the Sixers, but they're trying to prove something to you. And I think what happened with the Heat is everybody thought the Knicks were going to wipe the floor with the Heat, including me. And the Heat came in with that reverse mindset, the mindset the Knicks now have. Like, yo, we got these dudes. And the Heat told you that they were confident that they can beat the Knicks coming into that series. I think it was Duncan Robinson or Tyler Hero, one of the two. They said it over summer. They knew they were going to beat the Knicks. You know, that's a different level of confidence coming from a player that's for real. It's not fake fan confidence. When you truly believe that you can beat a team and other people don't, that's a different mindset. And I think the Knicks are in a good, good place right now. So we talk about the psychology of the game, psychology of the series, and how fan brain, fan talk, fan nonsense, you know, it is one thing. Analysis is one thing, and how the players go into a series is what really, really matters, and how I think the Knicks are in a real good place there. So we talked about that. The psychology is there. You see them wearing black hoodies in the press conference. You see Jalen Brunson got got shafted out of the Olympic team. And I know there's some basketball reasons why, but I know he feels shafted. I know he wants to be on that team. He wanted an opportunity to get a gold medal. He wanted an opportunity to play with all of those all-time greats. And he got shafted for Halliburton. Halliburton gets him again. Halliburton got him last year for the All-Star game, left him out because everybody said Halliburton was better. He has a lot to prove. He's angry. He's mad. You hear him talking about the Miami series last year. His mind is in the right place. The Knicks' mind is in the right place. His game one is a big game. Let's talk about the basketball. I think coming into this game, you see Embiid's list is questionable. There's a 90% chance that's all BS that he was never questionable for this game. But let me just talk, focus on that 10%. 10% chance that if he doesn't play this game, there's a chance that the Sixers punt this game. I don't know if Nurse is that ballsy of a coach to say, I think my team can beat this Knicks team without Embiid for a game, or they're good enough to attempt it to rest Embiid so that he can be stronger for game two, and then we can have a game of film against us in game one and then really attack game two with a healthier Embiid. I don't know if he has the balls to do that, but I think there's about a 10% chance that he's willing to do that. And I think there's also a chance that he's willing to throw Embiid out there, see how the game goes, and then pull him if he thinks he's getting beat up a little bit too much, and save him for game two. I think there is a slight chance that the 76ers are walking into this game knowing it's going to be a madhouse and use this as a feel-out game and really put the eggs in all our eggs in the basket for game two. A 10% chance. I'm not saying for sure. The 10% chance, but throwing that out and assuming Embiid plays this game, Embiid played a few days ago, not a ton of rest, not a ton of rest. You could tell he's out of shape. You can tell his knee hurts. You can tell he's a little bit gimpy. But because he's so talented and because he's so big, he still presents a problem for the Knicks, right? So or anybody. But let's focus on what the 76ers are, even with a 75% Embiid. Right, or what they were even before. People talk about them having a 30-8 record and don't go get into the nuance of strength of schedule. Right, they had a weaker schedule before. Justin Termini, I remember Justin Termini talking about their schedule being a cupcake schedule at the time. Right, and then Embiid got hurt, and then obviously they struggled. And you know, the difference between the three seed and the play-in was not as significant as you would think, typically looking at the standings. Right, it was only a few games, so they didn't keep pace, but then Embiid came back at the end of the season. They won a bunch of games in a row. So their advantage is more so on defense than it is offense, which is what I was trying to focus. I think everybody's thinking about MVP Embiid and scoring 35 points and how Maxey had an excellent season and how these guys are going to score a ton of points. And every time when fans think about basketball, they only think about one side of the ball. They don't think about defense. Defense is where they hang their hat, and the Knicks are an offensive powerhouse. So we talked about it ad nauseum that Oubre plays Brunson well. Now you got Melton's not going to play. I thought Melton was going to be another X factor. He doesn't look like he's going to play. Even if he comes back in the series, he's going to be a little hampered. So we're going to put him to the back burner. So that means more minutes for Kyle Lowry, who's a pain in the butt. Cam Payne has also been a pain in the butt playing against the Knicks. He's also been a pain in the butt. He's not going to play a ton of minutes, but Lowry is. This is Lowry's time. This is his time. He's going to make a lot of big plays out there. He's going to cover for the mistakes of a lot of the players. Batum, another excellent defensive player. Oubre has played excellent defense. Embiid said he's been the third best player on the team. Tobias Harris is an asterisk. He has good size for the Knicks. If OG's not around him, he can shoot over anybody, but he's hit or miss. You're not going to break your neck about it. We all know that Paul Reed can make some plays, even though you don't expect Paul Reed to make plays. He's a last resort. He killed the Knicks in that 79-73 game, right? But ultimately, this is a defensive team, and they have a lot of defensive players. And you know, the Knicks aren't a strong offensive team. Now, I understand offensive rating is high and all of that stuff. Not a strong offensive team. And they score a lot of their points in the paint where Embiid is dominant defensively. Now, so they have to get Embiid moving around the floor as much as possible. They got to get him running around the perimeter. They got to get him chasing the corners and contesting shots. They can't have him just standing in the paint waiting for Jaylen to come into the rim, right? So I think the Knicks know that. The Knicks got to find that rhythm. If Nurse comes up, Nurse has been known for throwing wrinkles and and having different defensive strategies, and so was Spoelstra, and they all got cooked up by Jalen Brunson. The difference is that Oubre had played Jalen straight up very well, right? And also, they also did that bracketing technique where they sit on his shooting hand when he drives to the right side. They force him to the right side, and they sit on his shooting hand and then, you know, bracket the paint, so they make it real hard for him to get the pass off or the shot off. But what Brunson has been doing the last few weeks is they've been snaking their way back to the left side no matter what and not letting you force them to the right, right? So the other thing with Oubre is Oubre admitted that he had to take a cold bath after his game against Brunson because he really wore him down. So over the course of a series, as well as Oubre has played, and he's been mouthy coming into this series as well as he's played, you got to expect that he's going to take a beating. He already said it after one game he took a beat. So imagine after game two, game three, he's going to take a beat. Right. So I think this is going to come down not to the Knicks defense, which has been solid all year. Obviously, health is key for everybody, so we're going to throw that out. It's going to come down to, can the Knicks score consistently against the 76ers? Can they create open shots and knock them down and create open opportunities and knock them down? I think Josh Hart, this is going to be a key Josh Hart series. I think they might even put Embiid on Josh Hart a lot of times and dare Josh Hart to shoot. Because if Josh Hart comes anywhere near the paint, Embiid is going to be a pain in the butt with him. Even if he stops at the free throw line, Embiid is really good at taking that real big step and coming out. Now, it's going to wear him down if he has to keep putting pressure on that knee to jump at you. But if Josh Hart is not hitting his outside shots and then he starts trying to drive the paint and take that little floater or a little free throw line jump shot because Embiid is guarding him and he comes out at the last minute to make it, you know, to make it difficult, I don't think Josh is going to make a lot of those shots. He needs to make a lot of those shots if they end up doing that. Because I can see them putting somebody else on Hartenstein so they can trap the pick and roll and you know, do different things on Brunson coming off those screens and not keep Embiid running around the perimeter chasing him. I can see them doing a lot of that and just keeping Embiid on Josh Hart wherever Josh Hart is. So Josh Hart, I think this is a big series for him to make plays, and guys have played off of him all year. The difference is some teams play off of him, but still allow him to drive into the paint and then help off the perimeter so he can create open shots. If you have the discipline to make him drive the paint and not help off the perimeter and make him a scorer, especially if you keep an Embiid in the paint, you have been able to have success against Josh Hart offensively. It's when you play off of him and you still let him get into the paint and you still sag off the perimeter when he gets into the paint and he creates open shots that burns you. All right. So the other thing is there's been a lot of back cuts, and Knicks have been doing a lot of back cuts when the center steps up in the paint. You know, you got to keep Embiid moving. Embiid is real good at taking, you know, one step, taking a false step and then recovering. Even with this knee injury, he's still better than most guys at doing it. So they got to keep him moving even if they have him on Josh Hart. They got to do dribble handoffs if he's going to sack off Josh Hart. They got to do dribble handoffs. They got to make shots. And I think that's the key. I think, to me, that's the key. Offensively, I don't think there's anything the Sixers are going to do that the Knicks have not seen and have not expected. You might see Batum and Tobias have some hot games and get off here and there. You definitely might see that. But other than that, I don't think in the half court, I don't think they're going to do anything the Knicks don't know and haven't been prepared for. I just don't think there's going to be any surprises. This is going to be a defensive series, and it's going to come down to the Knicks' ability to make shots. And that might be simplifying it, but, you know, I told you how that can be a struggle because of the 76ers and how they play. And it's going to be real physical. They're not going to be a lot of foul calls. You know, they don't get Brunson calls anymore. You know, so the Knicks are going to need a big series come off the bench from Bogdanović, especially Bogdanović, because Josh is going to, I think Josh is going to, I think he's ready psychologically, but I just don't know if he offensively, if he's going to put the points on the board they need to put on the board the way they're going to play him. So I'll be real interested. That's going to be the one thing I'm looking at in this series outside of how Brunson plays. And, you know, he's going to want to play well. You know, he's going to get double teamed. You know, Oubre's going to be on him. He's going to be really, really aggressive. How that matchup goes is how the series goes. But assuming Brunson's still going to be Brunson and find a way to be Brunson, it's got to be Hart making big plays and everybody doing what they've been doing up until now. Defensively, oh, the other thing offensively is Mitchell Robinson, man. I got to tell you, man, I don't know, man. I think I'm just going to be honest. I don't know if what he's giving you defensively so far is breaking even with what he's taking away from you offensively. He's not getting a ton of offensive rebounds right now. Okay. Defensively, he's not as quick twitch as he was. He's definitely not getting out to the perimeter consistently. You know, he's off and on with that. He's not been dominant on the boards in general. And there's just nothing he's going to do if, whether it be Paul Reed or Embiid, come off of him on the perimeter. There's nothing he's going to do. They're not passing him the ball. We talked about that all year. The pocket pass has been real good for Hartenstein in the last few weeks, but they can't do it with Mitchell Robinson because he keeps dropping the ball. And he gets fouled. He's not making free throws. You saw him making free throws in the video this week, working on it. Yeah, okay, good. You're working on it. That don't mean nothing to me. You've been working on it. Actually, a worse free throw shooter than you were 2 years ago. So I just don't know. And I just rather have, listen, it was Precious who was on the floor, right? When they played Sixers early in the year, it was Precious who was on the floor who played well. I just think Precious, and I saw a Toronto Raptor content creator talk about how Precious always plays Embiid well. And I haven't looked at the numbers. I didn't double check it, but I know he played him well in that series. I just want to see more Precious. He got more spark. And in a defensive series, the fact that Precious is hustling around the court the way he is, especially if Paul Reed is out there, like, you know, if Embiid starts working Precious, I get it, you know. But especially with Paul Reed out there, I just feel like Precious is going to give you more. Like, I think you have to throw Mitchell out there and see if you get a good Mitchell. And if you don't, you got to put Precious out there. And Precious, because Precious won that Bulls game, he's going to be a spark, whereas Mitchell's out there, he's not sparking. He's not quick twitch. So I'm afraid of the Mitchell Robinson minutes. You know, other than that, this game one, I think it's Knicks at six, by the way. But this game one, I think, is key because the Knicks have to win this game. And it's not like the series is over if they don't win it. I don't care about the percentages. I'm just saying it's not like the series is over. They can win in Philadelphia. They can recover. But Josh Hart already told you what a game one loss can do to you at home, at the Garden, against a team that you know that can beat you. He already told you what it could do. So with all of the naysayer talk, with all of the fan talk, with all of the expectations for the team in general, to lose this game, game one, where the Sixers played just a few days ago, and you're rested, to lose this game, it just, outside of setting the obvious bad precedent for the series, I just think it would be a situation where I think this is probably a 50-50 series right now in terms of who could win it objectively. I think it takes it from 50-50 to 70-30 Sixers just losing this game. Because I really don't even think the Sixers expect to win this game. I think the Sixers expect to come out here and play as hard as they can and see what happens. But if they lose, cool. We got film on them. You know, let's rest Embiid and be ready for game two. You know, I think the Sixers want to put all their eggs in the basket for game two. So them even being in the game in game one is going to give them loads and loads of confidence. And if they win it, I just think it's, again, uphill battle. So I expect the Knicks to win, and I put money, I don't know, I'm not a big wagerer. I put money on the Knicks winning this game by 15-plus points. I think the Knicks are going to blow their doors off in the second half of this game. And even, it doesn't, a win is a win, okay? A win is a win, it doesn't matter. But that's what I really expect. If I see the Knicks blow the doors off of them in this game, then I feel confident. Not because, oh, it's one win, game one win, then you can win the series. No, none of that nonsense. But it tells me that I got the vibe of the series right. It tells me I got the vibe of the team right. Blow them by 15-plus points. If they, you know, win in the nip and tuck game, I'm just going to be nervous about the series. But if they win the game, they win the game. But the Knicks win these first two games because I don't think there's a reason. The 76ers don't have any of it. But get home court advantage. The 76ers don't have advantages in game one and game two at all. And B should be worn down for game two. He should be a little bit worn down from the playing game right now. So win these two games and then see what happens game three, game four. But win these two games. Win game one, win game two. Pat Riley always said a series doesn't start until the home team wins. People have made fun of that statement. They joked about that statement. They don't think even NBA guys have made fun of that statement. They don't see, to me, the perspective that Pat Riley was trying to give, which is everybody holding court is chalk. It's chalk. You're supposed to win your home games. You win your home games. You win game one and game two. It's a home team. That's chalk. Series is not over. I don't care what the percentages are. It's chalk. If the road team splits and it's different, that means everybody can go home. They can then go home and hold court. That's why the series might be entertaining. There might be ups and downs. There might be, you know, some exciting finishes. But at the end of the day, home team wins. They're doing what they're supposed to do. And that's what this game is for the Knicks. Do what you're supposed to do. Don't get overly excited. If they win these games, they can win by 15 plus. Don't think the series is over. They did what they're supposed to do. If they don't, then it's kind of panic time. At Sports Ethos on Twitter, at Ethos Knicks, Andre Gallagher at The Watchers 7. Until next time.